And so we've seen the exposition of fall and creation, the rising action, right, the movement toward redemption. And now we have reached what Christensen is calling the climax. This is the incarnation, death, and resurrection of the Redeemer, right? When all seems lost, he says, when hope is a rare commodity, when God's people once again come under the oppressive rule of another powerful nation, Rome, a bright and mysterious star appears on the horizon, Matthew chapter 2, right? At the most crucial point in the story, a most remarkable and unexpected event unfolds. So now another twist in the story, right? The author enters directly into the plot and dons the robes of humanity. Not only is this a hero, a man like us, he tells us, but he's also God, very God.
Right. Right. Yeah. And he enters into a humble beginning of a humble people, of a backwater country seen insignificant, that is going through rebellion, that you get like third rate governors that come in after fourth rate governors have failed. And Rome is the mightiest mighted that ever mighted. Right. I mean, it is conquering the known world and then some. It's going out to Britannia and going, oh, okay, there's more land out here. We're gonna take these guys too, yeah. and creating road infrastructure that reaches to all points unknown, so that if you were a Roman citizen and traveled it, no one would want to attack you because the full might of Rome would come upon you if you attacked Roman citizens.
And all streets, all roads led to Rome. Yeah. And so at this point, you know, you say, yes, and you yell out, and you're, because, you know, it's finally happening. The hero is here. Yeah. And, you know, everything is going to be great. Right. Right. No.
In baby form. Oh, so close. But there is another remarkable twist in this plot.
Another remarkable twist.
There's more. The Jews of Jesus' day expected the Messiah to be a warrior, coming in, riding this horse, spear, lance, to redeem the people, the land, kick out the bad guys, and, you know, probably start the Edenistic conquering of the world. But here's where he's going to make his stand. He's going to plant the flag of Israel. They had a flag at the time, and in this symbol, conquer. So they saw this great warrior king that Israel, he was going to be the greatest warrior king that Israel ever saw. He was going to be from the son of David. They expect a conventional defeat of Israel's armies, enemies, their Roman oppressors. So even though Isaiah prophesied that the Messiah would die an atoning death to bring about the redemption of God's people, Isaiah 52 and 53, the grand author blinds them to these realities, which again, Isaiah prophesied. And John 12 talks about this. They fail to realize that their greatest enemy is not outside of them. Right. It's not the Romans. Yes, they're an enemy. Yes, they're doing bad things. Yes, they're subjecting you. It's not the culture. It's not the Sadducees or the empty rules of the Pharisees. It's not even Satan. Mm. In Revelation, Satan is bound up for a bit. And we're still bad. Yeah. We're still bad. The true enemy is something deeply rooted within. Hatred of your brother is like murdering him. Mm. Lusting after a woman is committing adultery. Mm. It's not outside. Those things influence. Those things are important. But ultimately, what are we trying to change? The heart.
Right.
No ordinary means of power can defeat the evil that resides in the human heart. That conflict cannot be overcome by a conventional hero. And right. We see it within the mind and heart of Adam and Eve. Right. And it's Satan influences, but they're the ultimate deciders. And that's what needs to be changed and redeemed and made more perfect.
Exactly right. And so God comes in, rips out our heart, tears it into pieces and gives, no. Strangely, he says, sin and evil will be vanquished by God's weakness, not his power, right? Jesus's victory will be achieved through his voluntary vulnerability before wicked men. Nobody sees this coming, he tells us. And yet, in that moment of utter weakness, the greatest power in history is put on display. Right, Satan believes that he's defeated Jesus just as he defeated the first Adam.
Right,
right? Yeah. He's won. He's dancing, yeah. right? The little victory dance.
Right,
right. right? He's crushed the Messiah's heel. Yet it seems that Satan himself is blinded to the prophecies of Isaiah, right, that said he had to suffer, and he's blinded to his own crushing defeat. Mm-hmm. Right,
right. So Jesus doesn't come into the world just to die. He comes to die and rise again.
Mm.
The success of what the incarnate Lord of the universe achieves on the bloody cross makes sense only when 3 days hence, before decay sets in, shocked onlookers gaze into his empty tomb. It's the holding the breath. There are 3 days of holding the breath.
Yeah.
Why isn't the story ending?
Yeah.
Why are there more pages to this book?
Right, right. What's going on here? I mean, he's dead, yeah. right?
You know, a Braveheart, you know, William Wallace cries freedom and dies. And, you know, okay, things happen after it and stuff like that. He inspires a few people. But, you know, Scotland still is under monarchistic rule. And, you know, it was a good story. There's some redemption. There's some. But ultimately we learn, you know, is freedom worth dying for?
Right.
Nope. The breath is exhaled when you take a breath in and see an empty tomb. It's shocking. Something no one thought would come.
Right.